What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, FightfulSelect.com. This is the Backstage Report podcast. For those of you that are new, here's the deal. 15, 20 minutes of exclusive news, things that we've reported here on FightfulSelect.com over the past week. I add some more details to those. We do some contract updates, some injury updates when applicable. But let's get into the big story, the story why you're here. Samoa Joe headed back to NXT. So all throughout last week, rumors were running rampant among staff, later talent, about Samoa Joe. He was at the Performance Center on Tuesday of last week, speaking with officials, speaking with Triple H. We're told they do have an idea in mind for him, but that is open to expansion if all parties agree on it. Triple H was a big proponent of bringing Joe back. We're told that almost immediately he was adamant that Joe be brought back, or at least an offer be made or something like that. But there had been pitches to use for NXT to use Samoa Joe as of last week. He had officials confirming that Joe was briefly at the Performance Center. We were not told why he was there at the time. We did confirmation that there had been pitches to use him, though. And again, we had heard that Joe had wanted to wrestle in WWE but could not get cleared. And we're told that, but if he's able to be cleared eventually, he is expected to wrestle. There were a bunch of releases over the last 14 months, we've heard, that NXT had discussed trying to bring in but didn't end up happening. And there was at least one of the released wrestlers this year that we are told pitched to come back into NXT. Now, Chelsea Green had also noted on her podcast that she was there doing some medical stuff, getting cleared and all that. That's commonplace. There are a lot of recently released wrestlers that sometimes are able to swing by the PC. They are still under contract, but I don't think that she has made any pitches to come back in. I think she's pretty well got herself set up for after WWE life, but there have been other wrestlers that have said, hey, what if I came back to NXT? And at least one of them was actually rejected. I don't know who made the contact, if Joe made the contact or Triple H did, but I know that Triple H is a big fan and a big supporter of Samoa Joe. And Samoa Joe headed back to NXT. In addition, there are several wrestlers that the company has pushed to, or people in the company that have pushed to bring back. Over a half a dozen talent in the company and staff had heard that there was interest in bringing him in. We have a bunch of NXT news, actually. A lot of people were asking about Kona Reeves. He has not been around for like 15 months following a surgery. We're told he's been back at the Performance Center for quite some time and is more than good to go, has been making creative pitches for significant character change based on what we've seen from him in the past. Reeves was briefly given a push in 2018 before being pushed back down the card, but we've had numerous guest coaches that we've spoken to specifically point him out as someone they've enjoyed working with when they came in for spots at the Performance Center. I constantly have people talk about his motor and his timing and a lot of stuff like that, or at least did before the injury. I can't speak to that since then because I don't know if they've even had guest coaches or if I've spoken to any about that since then. But before, Kona Reeves is a name that constantly got brought up, so yeah, I mean, it's good to see that he's healthy because when you're out that long, people wonder, like, is this going to be a permanent thing? Even more NXT news. We had some notes from our interview with Kyle O'Reilly. He was fine with Adam Cole weaseling his way into the main event of TakeOver. He's curious and excited about possibly facing Kushida in the future and bringing that match that they had in New Japan and other places to a new audience. He was told a couple of days before Regal's initial War Games announcement that they would be in the match and said that he wanted to emulate Sean Waltman in WCW bumping heavy in that War Games match because he didn't see a lot of people necessarily filling that role, so he wanted to be that guy. Elsewhere in NXT, gosh, this is an NXT-heavy episode right here. Ever-Rise, they signed new contracts recently, we've learned. When the two began appearing more on NXT TV, Fightful inquired about their status and if anything had changed. And we were told that WWE had offered them new WWE contracts months ago. And we've heard from the WWE side that they kind of wanted to get the contracts to match up in length, but we're not sure if that actually ended up happening. The WWE side of things have told us that Ever-Rise did agree on new deals, but a timetable of when they were agreed upon and the length were not specified. Well, let's keep it anchored right over to NXT, the tryouts that happened actually a year and a half ago. Toronto, SummerSlam. And hardly anybody was able to come into the country because of them. Jody Threat was a big name that was quickly emerging on the Canadian indie scene. And she got a WWE tryout for that weekend, Toronto SummerSlam. She's got an incredible look. She's really good. She does a lot of good intergender matches. She was told about 4 weeks ahead of time that she'd be doing that. And when I spoke with her about it, she said she got good feedback. They said that something was there and to keep working on it. And she had spent some time in the weeks prior to that training with Trish Stratus, who actually posted our interview on Twitter, and they were getting her ready for her retirement match. That was for SummerSlam Toronto weekend as well. Stratus was getting some of the ring rust off, in which Jody Threat said there was really none of, that she just kind of stepped in and was really, really good. Threat also had expressed her interest in working for Impact, said Scott D'Amore knows who she is, but she hasn't heard back about possibly appearing there. She's been granted a lot of interest from promoters, but due to the lack of visa, hasn't been able to consistently work in the U.S. until now. So hopefully things will change for her, because she is an emerging prospect, and she is so good. Moose and Omega, that match aired this Saturday, but it actually taped the Friday, 8 days before that, in Daly's Place. We're told there was just, you know, positive interaction between the AEW and Impact people backstage, but that it was taped that weekend. There were several people that were in Impact that had no idea when the title match was filmed, because a lot of this came together sort of afterwards, from what I understand. There was a lot of question marks about Slammiversary from a roster perspective this past week, because they didn't have... There were a couple title matches that weren't necessarily set according to the people who were at the tapings, if that makes any sense. They didn't tie up everything at these tapings that lead into Slammiversary, so they've got some room to work and some stuff that they can do with post-tapes. Like, this was a post-tape. They went to Daly's Place, they filmed this, they determined that Kenny Omega was still the champion, they did the Sami Callihan thing, they did the Sami Callihan firing, but there's also another title match still on the table, from what I understand there. Oh, on the table, through tables, through barbed wire, it's going to be a lot. Matt Cardona's attack on Nick Gage blew up last week, with the hype being built for an eventual match between the two in July. The finish saw Matt Cardona dressed as a druid, and he emulated Jon Moxley's mannerisms before doing a paradigm shift and revealing his identity to the crowd. Backstage at that show, he was in full gimmick to prevent word of that from getting out, and the spot was only known by a few select people. And then we're told that that at Cardona's show later that week, a police officer that responded to the situation, I'm not sure if it's the security, but I know at least one of the police officers was not clued that Nick Gage was going to be coming in, and reacted accordingly. Amazing. Amazing. Hey, some good news. NWA, fresh off their most recent pay-per-view effort, an NWA all-women's pay-per-view announced. Fightful Select broke the news of it last week. They announced it shortly afterwards, August 28th. We do know that there are a couple members of the roster that have been appearing on there that are booked elsewhere, but the majority of the top talent is going to be there. I think all the top talent is going to be there, now that I think of it. Mickie James says she does not plan on wrestling on it. Let me tell you guys that this show has more buzz than anything NWA has done over the last, since the pandemic. I'll say that. We got more questions on our Q&A about the NWA this week than we had in the last 8-9 months combined, and all of them were about the women's turn or the women's pay-per-view. I think it's going to be a good show. A lot of people are saying, well, they've only got 10, 11, 12 women's wrestlers. How can they do a show? Their shows are a couple hours long, so I think they're going to be able to do one really, really well. This was a good idea. I don't know what the relationship is like with NWA and Thunder Rosa, but if you don't ask for Thunder Rosa's help in putting that event on, I'm not sure. I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice. Now, I'm sure that Mickie James wants to do a lot of that herself, and more power to her, but man, Thunder Rosa has so much experience in doing that with Mission Pro. I mean, look at the buzz her Mission Pro show was getting this weekend on a busy weekend with with UFC and NXT and all that stuff. So I love this idea. I'm so glad they're doing it. This is the best thing that NWA has done since they came back, bar none, without a doubt. Some confusing news, some wild news. I'm going to break this one down for you as best I can. So we had a lot of people asking what happened with Authors of Pain. Fightful had said there were inquiries by wrestlers themselves, not the wrestlers, not Akam and Razor, about bringing them into a particular company or particular companies last year, but that no movement was on the horizon. We're told they were brought up to AEW management last year, who were told who weren't sure that they were a good fit at the time, but left the door open. We're also told they were brought up to New Japan Pro Wrestling management, who were not bringing over new talent from overseas at the time. And we're told that the budget for such a move was said to have not been near what was required. And we were told that as of now, both members are working regular jobs and seemed happy doing it. I can't speak to that, but they seemed happy doing it. In the hours since we ran that story, another promoter reached out to Fightful and indicated that when their people reached out to AOP, the company was informed that both men had retired. After I published that story, Akam and Razor posted pictures saying, "We're not done yet, bitches." However, it was verified to me that that act did tell this company that they were retired, or representatives on their behalf, I should specify. But a lot of people were saying, like, "Oh, that's not accurate." No, it was accurate. They told the company that. It's just, it's pro wrestling. You can change your mind. You can unretire. I hope they do, because, I mean, Akam is 28, Razor is 26. I was shocked in, like, got maybe 6 years ago, when Razor made the jump from MMA to pro wrestling. I mean, I know a lot of people know that Razor does or did MMA. I don't think you might realize, like, how much of an upside this guy had. He was a 20-year-old prospect who was 6-2 in MMA. He already had an in for Bellator. He had just fought for Bellator. He lost the fight, unfortunately, but he had beaten Ole Thompson, who was not the most technically savvy fighter in the world by any stretch of the imagination, but that guy was a UFC veteran. So you had the 20-year-old Razor, 6-2 as a 20-year-old heavyweight. That is, by all intents and purposes, a 20-plus year career on the horizon for something that he was already in, he had already done for a couple of years, he had plenty of experience in, and that he was doing pretty well at. I mean, 6-2 is pretty solid. If they would have done a season of The Ultimate Fighter as heavyweights at that point, I think they probably would have brought him in. But by the time they did in 2018, he was already well into the WWE. So that's a surprise to me that he didn't pursue that a little bit more. I'll say this. They got released at the absolute worst time for international wrestlers to be released. There are so many visa issues and hurdles and things like that. If they want work, they're going to get work. And I hope they do want work. I would love to see them back. Injury update. Shotzi Blackheart had said that she was injured. I believe it's just a storyline to keep her off of TakeOver, but she appeared on TakeOver. So there you go. Unfortunately, Sunil Singh has revealed that he suffered a dislocated shoulder on a recent episode of 205 Live. Man, that sucks. Those guys, like, when they get going, it seems like one fella is out, and then they get taken off TV. They are just such entertaining, talented fellas. Grand Metal Leak dealing with an undisclosed injury. He apologized to Lince Dorado for missing Raw last week. He said in a tweet, "See you next week." So I don't know if that means night on Raw. They're going to, like, see each other when they hang out and have pizza, or, like, what the deal is. But hopefully he gets better soon. Grand Metal League has been really good in this tag team run. Contract updates. There's not a lot. Andrade signed with AEW, and that is really the only update that we've heard. Mark Henry has said that there is interest on both sides about Braun Strowman joining AEW. So maybe we'll see that. Sonny Ono said that AEW wanted him to manage Ultimo Dragon for a one shot. Steve Macklin said that Impact Wrestling offered him a contract the moment his 90-day non-compete expired. Kylie Rae had signed with NWA. We don't know the length of that deal. Chris Jericho confirmed that he's no longer under contract in New Japan and hasn't since like last year. So that's your contract updates. Guys, thank you all so much. Thank you for subscribing. Tell the world, if you don't mind, that what we do here doesn't suck ass. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you guys so much. We're out.